Good afternoon and welcome to episode 264 of the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. I'm your host, Harry, joined here today by Leo.
Hello!
Hello, and this is the first time that you and I have been on the podcast together, so should be an interesting experience. I'm interested to see how this will go, because we're going to be talking about the last day of the Rittenhouse trial in terms of what they've been going through with the closing statements from the defense and the prosecution. We're going to be going over Ben and Jerry's expansive history of calling everyone and everything racist.
Yeah, even though they're racist themselves, their policy is actually to try and kill people from BAME communities. So we're going to go into that.
Well, I'm very interested to learn more about that. And finally, we're also going to take a look at America's shortages and Jen Psaki's repeated and pathetic attempts to excuse them. But before we go into that, we've got a few announcements to make. So first of all, we've got a new premium article by Hugo, Conservatives on the Wrong Side of Whig History, which Carl recommended I read through because he said it was an excellent article, and I have done. And it really is an excellent article. Hugo's kind of examining the way in which the turmoil between the Whigs and the Tories back after the Reformation sort of presented progress as a very one-way street. And from that position of positional view of history, the Conservatives have always been sort of seen as the weight on progress's back, not necessarily preventing anything, more just setting the pace, and then anything outside of the progressive or conservative paradigm being labelled as reactionaries, for instance, you know, kind of as a dismissive thing, because they approach progress from a different perspective to what we would call the progressives. And he examines where he thinks that that sort of perspective will take us in the future. Very, very, very interesting article, so I'd recommend giving that a look in.
How much is it to become a silver member?
Oh, yes, because it's premium, we've got the silver member audio track. Silver member, I think, is it £10 or £15 per month?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's
either.
Like a mobile phone contract.
Well,
I don't know if we're talking about how you look like you sell mobile phones.
We got to get paid somehow,
man. Oh, yeah, no, I understand that.
Right now, I'm playing the part of the sleazy salesman, okay? Don't get in the way of my pitch.
You're really running with it.
Yeah,
really leaning into it.
Thank you very much. I've always thought of myself as quite a sleazy guy, so I'm glad that I can fit the role. Any silver members are above, check out the audio track for that. We've also got this premium book club, which is Carl and Bo talking about Niccolo Machiavelli's The Prince. I've never read it, but I'm sure it's a really interesting discussion. Those two know a lot about history, so I'm sure it's a great chat. Also, be sure to follow us on alternative social media platforms such as Getter. We are verified on there, so if you want to have the latest updates from us, give us a follow there. And also in relation to Getter, check out Carl's appearance on the 8th of December at Getter's Counter Conference, where, you know, they're just having a discussion. I'm not exactly sure what they'll be discussing, but it's about free speech and all that good stuff, so give that a check out. And without any further ado, let's get into the stories. So, many people will be aware that I've been following the Rittenhouse trial quite closely, and the most recent day of the trial was yesterday, which was the final day where the defence and the prosecution got to put forward their closing statements alongside a number of jury instructions that were provided by the judge to the jury for the consideration of the charges that Kyle was being levelled with. Originally, Kyle, I believe, was being levelled with 7 charges. One that was already dismissed last week was the curfew violation, because there was a curfew on in Kenosha when he was there. Didn't really stick, because it turns out everybody else who was out in Kenosha that night was also violating curfew. Surprise, surprise. And then this... The first thing that happened yesterday was that the judge dismissed the 6th charge that was being levelled against Kyle, which was the unlawful possession of a gun by a minor. Because it turns out, if you actually read the law in Wisconsin, as long as you're not owning a pistol or a short-barreled rifle, if you're 17, you're able to carry a gun around. And AR-15s being a long-barreled rifle mean that he was actually legally able to carry that around.
Yeah.
And as you can imagine, there has been a certain level of left-wing cope in response to this. You can see here, we've got a Jonathan Capehart on Twitter. Rittenhouse judge dismisses gun charge against Rittenhouse. And I'm like, well, no one really cares what you're like, but you're going to put your opinion out there anyway. And then we also go on to the most predictable response possible, which was that white supremacy did it. So white supremacy is when a cop goes free after murdering 12-year-old Tamir Rice, because Tamir shouldn't have been playing with a toy gun. no relation to this particular case, but gotta bring it up anyway. But a judge dismisses a weapon charge against a white supremacist, Kyle Rittenhouse. No proof whatsoever that he was a white supremacist, for an AR-15 weapon of war. Ooh, sounds big and scary, doesn't it? Even after he actually murdered two people with it. Thing is, he didn't murder them, he killed them, and the trial
the trial is to determine whether it's murder or whether it was just righteous justice rained down by a, what, is he 15 or something?
He was 17 at the time, he's 18
now.
I think we should
arm 15-year-olds and let them roam the streets sorting out problems. I wonder how it would work in the UK. I mean, when I was 17, sniffing glue and drinking cider. I think we'd have. The good thing about America is, like, even there's sort of psychotic 17-year-olds.
Kyle psychotic.
I'd call him
commendable personally.
Even their 17-year-olds are like quite temperate and aren't, you know.
Well, I mean, from
I mean, if this was Glasgow, he wouldn't. Have
oh, there'd
shot
be
two,
chaos in the streets.
Oh yeah, yeah, there wouldn't be two people dead. There'd be the whole
half
of Glasgow.
Half the city would be gone.
There'd be Kyle left.
And, you know, who's to say whether that's a good thing or not? But moving on. So first of all, we've got to look at the prosecution's closing statements. We've got this article up for some more details if you want to check it out on Legal Insurrection. Otherwise, just check out the footage that has been streamed live from the actual the trial itself. So there's just a few things I want to go over and a few clips that I want to show in regards to Binger, who is the assistant district attorney, the head of the prosecution, who leveled the charges at Kyle in the first place and has obviously had it in for Kyle ever since this happened, despite the fact that the footage clearly, as far as I can tell, showed Kyle defending himself. So there's a few things I just want to point out in regards to his closing statements. First of all, that, as you can imagine, given the sort of cope that we experience from the leftists constantly and their terror over invoking its name, he repeatedly said AR-15, 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 because of course it is the media's favorite boogeyman buzzword when it comes to guns, because it sounds scary, it looks kind of scary if you're unfamiliar with guns. So he's obviously, like I say, trying to play up to the media frenzy of that gun and scare any potential jurors, because they are also quite unlikely to know anything about guns. He also tries.
It's quite a scary gun though. It's an assault rifle. And,
it's a semi-automatic.
My dad had a bigger gun.
Okay, here we go. I'm aware of this.
It's banned in America. It's that big.
Really?
Yeah, it's mounted on a boat.
And what was that called?
Punt gun. Yeah. Can take out like 25 Antifa rioters in one go.
Wow. If
only my dad had sailed his punt up Kenosha.
Kyle would have had much less trouble. Binger also tried to change the arguments that they were making for the prosecution from murder to provocation, because initially they were trying to state in the opening statements that Kyle had chased Rosenbaum, who was the initial aggressor, alongside the two people that Rosenbaum had been with that evening, which was a Joshua Zeminski and Joshua Zeminski's wife, who they'd all been going around Kenosha that entire evening, causing trouble as part of the riots, setting fire to things, threatening people, and just acting like pillocks, to be perfectly honest. And they initially had stated that Kyle was the one who chased them with the gun, which is what led to Rosenbaum chasing Kyle and then Rosenbaum getting shot. When they released the FBI footage, and the drone footage clearly showed that Rosenbaum snuck up on Kyle and tried to ambush him, they changed tack.
And is this one the pedo one?
Rosenbaum was the pedophile, yes.
So he's sneaking up on a 15-year-old, 17-year-old.
I mean, he's still a minor, so the point's basically the same. I mean, Tucker Carlson, what was it, said, died as he lived trying to touch an unwilling minor. it's pretty great, isn't it? Yeah, but now they tried to introduce a late piece of evidence, which was an incredibly blurry photo, which was very unclear as to what it showed. Tried to use that piece of evidence to show that Rittenhouse was threateningly pointing his gun at Joshua Zeminski, which is what caused Rosenbaum. Complete change of the argument they were making to begin with. So big, big reach that they were trying to make. Yeah. They also tried to imply a number of times, they tried to imply a number of times Rittenhouse pointed his gun at Zeminski, and they made a number of absurd arguments throughout the closing statement. Mm. So if you skip
and,
along...
And obviously there's also video footage of, I think, everybody but Rosenbaum incident. And there's eyewitness testimony of the Rosenbaum.
I mean, there's pretty much footage of everything that happened regarding these incidences from multiple different angles, because you've got a modern riot nowadays, you've got people running about with their phones out recording everything. So you're not going to be able to miss anything, really. So yeah, you can see here they've pointed out Rittenhouse prosecution lies on the first slide of his closing argument, and they've pointed, in a nutshell, a 17-year-old teenager killed two unarmed people and severely wounded a third person with an AR-15 that he knew he couldn't have. Well, turns out, legally speaking, he could. He was not protecting his home or his family. He killed people after travelling to another state and staying out past the citywide curfew.
But it's where his dad lived.
Yeah, it's where his dad lived, and also where his, I think, his sister and her and his sister's boyfriend lived. Dominic Black, who's the guy who bought the gun for him, was the boyfriend of his sister.
So the gun didn't travel across state lines, which is quite important. Yeah. That's the prosecution where we're saying the transport of the gun over state lines.
Yeah, but
he crossed it, and obviously it's perfectly legal for people to cross state lines.
Especially when Antioch, where Kyle came from, is 10 minutes down the road from Kenosha. I mean, these are the people going on, borders are just invisible lines drawn on a map. And it's like, well, technically speaking, in this instance.
And especially these ones. Because it's like, you know, county, it's like going from like, it's not even like going from Cornwall to Devon. It's like, you know, it's like going from a ward in Haringey to, you know, another ward in Haringey. Nobody even knows. A postcode.
It's no big deal whatsoever. They're saying he lied about being an EMT. I mean, he did in some of the footage big up that he was an EMT, but obviously he was in a quite high pressure situation, so he wants to make himself seem big. And plus, so he's 17
he's got some
at
the
time.
Of the skills. I mean, it's pretty obvious that this 17-year-old, he's not a qualified paramedic, unless he, you know, like Doogie Howser, whatever he's called.
I had no idea.
Doogie Howser.
Maybe, but yeah, and then if we move along, we've got a clip here, which is some. Let's just go through some of the stupid arguments that Binger tried to put forward in his closing statements, which kind of just show how desperate he was. If you want to play this one, John.
Situation is the crowd have perfect knowledge when they're told that person running up the street just shot someone. We don't have time in the moment to go back and take a look at the body and replay the video and make a decision before going after the person with the gun. You know. We've had several police officers testify that in an active shooter situation, their first instinct, their first training, is to go in and stop the threat. They don't sit there and wonder, well, maybe it was self-defense. I don't know. I'm going to, you know, wait and see. And every day we read about heroes that stop active shooters. That's what was going on here.
So he tried.
And that crowd was right. And that crowd was full of heroes. That crowd did something that, honestly, I'm not sure I would have had the courage to do. If I see a guy running up the street with an AR-15 and I hear he just shot somebody.
Yeah.
So the crowd who are burning down businesses and rioting and assaulting people, they were heroes.
According to the defense.
I mean, that's an interesting tack. I wouldn't have thought he'd go with that tack, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, trying to describe... Anthony Huber, who I believe has, he has charges against, well, he had, because he's dead now, charges against him of beating his spouse and others, and holding a knife to the belly and throat of his own brother and sister.
Jeez.
Not what I would describe as heroic behavior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Gage Grosskreutz, who is an Antifa member, who was giving...
Got a bicep shot off.
Yeah, he's the guy who's a lefty now, even more so than he was before. He was a revolutionary kind of guy who admitted on the stand, Rittenhouse only shot my arm when I pointed a gun directly at his head.
Yeah, yeah.
So trying to paint these people as heroes, big reach.
And this clip is... just insane.
He just happens to stumble into it. So what does he do that night? Oh, let me tell you all the awful things Joseph Rosenbaum did. He tipped over a porta potty that had no one in it. He swung a chain. He lit a metal garbage dumpster on fire. Oh, and there's this empty wooden flatbed trailer that they pulled out in the middle of the road and they tipped it over to stop some bearcats and they lit it on fire. Oh, and he said some bad words. He said the N-word.
You know, if this was anybody else under any other situation, him saying the N-word would be a death sentence.
Yes. Like, I mean, I understand that lawyers have to play, like, devil's advocate and stuff, but this just seems to be... He's saying all this, like, bad stuff that you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
As if, it like, the guy's done nothing.
I know. And saying it in the most patronising tone possible as well. To the jury. The jury, I would imagine, I would hope, is not going to think... that this is gonna look great to them.
Yeah.
But he also did a number of other very strange things. If you move along, John. No, if you move along again, yeah. For some reason, he decided to point the gun at the jury.
First rule of gun safety: don't point guns at people. I mean, unless you're trying to shoot them,
and
because they're trying to hit you with a skateboard. But yeah, don't point guns at people. Don't have the finger on the trigger unless you're going to shoot.
Unless you're Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah, and also have the chamber open and stuff.
Yeah, if you want to. Do a Baldwin, that's how you do a Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe Alec Baldwin will play him in the film.
Yeah. If we skip along, there have been memes of this. John, on the one hand, we have an armed and dangerous, reckless maniac with blatant disregard for human life. On the other hand, we have Kyle Rittenhouse, highlighting there, of course, Rittenhouse when he was wondering about, always had his trigger discipline going very well. I mean, Binger is a Democrat, so I'm not surprised that he doesn't know how to use a gun. Skip along again, we've got some more memes. ADA Binger attempting to coerce a juror into having sex with his wife. That's a great one. If we move along again, there's another one. This is from when Rittenhouse was on the stand. Okay, one more hypothetical question. Is it normal if my wife has a boyfriend? Good question. And then if we move along, we can move on to the defense's closing statements. And this argument in particular says that the defense delivered a disappointingly weak closing argument. And they make some good points, but overall, I do think he did a much better job than Binger did, because Binger was all over the place. He was trying to stretch arguments and tie threads together that weren't there and basically just say these rioters... I mean, he said these rioters were heroes, and I mean, who's going to believe that? So he managed to wrap his arguments back around and kept reminding the jury that the state has actively been lying to them the whole time. For instance, we've all seen footage of Nathan De Bruin, the photographer with Asperger's, on the stand being cross-examined by Krauss, when Krauss says, "You met with us, yep, and we went over your statement with you, yep, and you didn't make it, and we didn't ask you to change your statement," and then he just goes, "Well, yeah, you did actually," which just looked terrible for them. They've been lying about many different factors. He brought up the fact that provocation was not mentioned anywhere in their original opening statement, but now is like the main foundation of their closing statement. Basically, just pointing out that their whole case has been flung together and is put together with tissue paper because they have no real leg to stand on. He also made point of the fact that it's a political trial because the prosecution saw someone who they considered to be on the other side of the political aisle to them shooting protesters, and he immediately made up with his mind about what had happened and presumably thought that he could ride the wave of goodwill off of prosecuting him without realizing that, oh God, I'm going to have to go through a trial and actually put forward an argument here.
Because that's the great thing about our criminal justice system, our American's criminal justice system. It's based on objective truth rather than
yes.
Like with Megan. Megan's now you know in trouble because, you know, she made some because of things, mistruths or whatever she said. Because there's like, you know, when she talks about this is my truth.
Oh,
the court doesn't care about your particular personal truth. The court cares about
the truth.
Yes. The objective, so absolute truth.
My truth is just a synonym for my opinion, basically, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
But yeah,
my feelings.
Yeah, he did a few things, like pointed out Rosenbaum was supposedly came out of jail that day. In fact, the prosecution had tried to say, oh, he came out of a hospital, even though there's no hospital records to show it.
Yeah.
And he also says that he wasn't
maybe
properly...
Maybe he was in a children's hospital, like maybe. Jimmy Savile.
Oh, no. He was also not properly medicated, and also referenced witness testimony that Rosenbaum had showed up at the riot and shouted, "I just got out of jail, and I'm not afraid to go back," which doesn't sound great.
So this is the hero for the left.
Yes. I mean, is
a
it...
A pedophile? Convicted pedophile?
Is it surprising that they would
who
stand
drops
up
the
for
N-bomb.
A bunch of pedos?
Yeah. Yeah, a convicted pedophile who drops the N-bomb.
Wait. So, racist pedophile. Sounds like a Democrat to me, to be fair. So let's just play a few more clips from the defense. One where he points out that this is not a game, that this is Kyle's real life. John, if you could play that.
This case is not a game. It is my client's life. We don't play fast and loose with the facts, pretending that Mr. Rosenbaum was citizen A number one guy. He was a bad man. He was there. He was causing trouble. He was a rioter. And my client had to deal with him that night alone.
And great point to make there. Rittenhouse, of course, being 17 at the time. You know, he's got the gun. He's being chased by a violent pedophile. Gets that close to him that he can just grab the gun. You're going to shoot. You're going to shoot because it's self-defense at that point. Yeah. Which is what the defense has been arguing the whole time.
Yeah.
There are a few other clips, but just to get through this segment a little bit faster, there was a few other important notes, which was that Joshua Zeminski and his wife, who were the two people hanging out with Rosenbaum the entire night, sort of like aiding and abetting him with whatever trouble that he was up to, did not appear at all at any point to give witness testimony as part of this trial. And the defense really hammered home on that, saying, like, you know, well, what I mean, none of us have heard what Zeminski said, and the prosecution are trying to make it sound like Rittenhouse pointed the gun at Zeminski. Yeah. Well, we've not heard that from Zeminski himself, so they can't really make that argument.
Yeah,
and then he went through each witness statement that they went through as part of the testimony, pointed out how each of them blew up in the prosecution's face, and he went through the videos in detail, the videos from the night, walked the jury through in detail. So overall, it wasn't exactly exciting past maybe the 15-minute mark where he was putting quite a lot of passion into it, but he did a much better job of actually walking the jurors through his argument rather than Binger just going like, oh, you know, all they did was set fire to a few businesses.
I mean,
who wouldn't heroically set fire to a business?
No, I mean, it's been really interesting. I don't have much experience of this side of the criminal justice system. My girlfriend's a former barrister, though. So I'm looking forward to sort of playing the clips to her.
Yeah, I've been following it with great interest. I've been sort of like every night when it's been going on, just like watching the trial stuff because it's been more interesting than television.
Yeah.
Because this is real life going on.
But the prosecution really seemed to have dropped the ball on quite a few things and almost treated it like a sort of PR exercise, as if the groundswell of public opinion on Twitter is going to carry this trial through. But that's just
Because Twitter is not the jury as much as they wish it were. But just to mention a few last things before we move on from this segment. So after the defense rested their case, the prosecution got to do a redirect on their closing statement. And given that Richards, the lead defense attorney, had brought up a number of times how the state were lying. He even described them at one point. He was like, they remind me of whiny defense attorneys. This guy, Krauss, Mr. Blobby here, got really triggered and just basically went up, and instead of actually doing a coherent argument as the redirect to try and wrap around the way that the defense did, the arguments that had just been made in their favor, he just went up and started yelling at the jurors.
Can we watch it?
We can watch it. We can watch a clip of it.
And that he had to exhaust all methods. Clearly, if there is provocation, he's guilty. But even outside of provocation, why do you get to immediately just start shooting? As Mr. Binger said, he brought a gun to a fist fight. And he was too cowardly to use his own fist to fight his way out.
What, to fight a guy who had a gun?
Theoretically,
that we think
he wanted
that
to go to Glasgow
that it is reasonable
bare knuckling him
to
by the sounds of it. I mean, what kind of
force,
argument is that? And the other one,
deadly
John,
force
if
in that
we
situation.
Pause this and go over to just the last clip that I have for this.
Everybody
segment.
Takes a beating sometimes, right? Sometimes you get in a scuffle and maybe you do get hurt a little bit. That doesn't mean you get to start plugging people with your Full Metal Jacket AR-15 rounds, and no, bullets are not bullets.
And the thing is,
that's legally
heard testimony.
I was going
to
say,
if somebody attacks you, you're legally allowed to defend yourself.
And that's the thing. And also, he basically, I don't know how he could say such a thing as part of the final part of his closing statements. Everybody takes a beating sometimes. So you've just admitted right there that the mob posed a physical threat to Kyle.
Yeah.
Because guess what? You get a few kicks in the head, that can kill you.
Yeah. So especially if you're a 17-year-old and you're being attacked by a pedophile, a guy with a gun.
And a guy with a skateboard. And a skateboard can be used as a deadly weapon, shocking as it may sound.
Apparently it's not quite as good as an AR-15.
Yeah, so that was terrible redirect made the prosecution's case look absolutely even worse than it already did. There have been people complaining, you know, as you would, but just let's skip over this just in the interest of time. So basically, it just seems that the prosecution, as always, has made an absolute pig's ear of this. And now all it is down to the jury's verdict. So hopefully, as we say, they adhere to the reasonable objective facts rather than going off of whatever Twitter or any other emotionally charged outlet might want them to go with, and hopefully we actually see justice here. Well, yeah. What little justice can be taken from this?
Yeah.
All right.
I want to see my, as Megan would say, I want to see my justice.
Yeah.
So, and this follows on, so my segment follows on from your segment quite nicely.
It dovetails
really nicely because it's about Ben and Jerry's. So they've waded in. I didn't even realize Ben and Jerry's had such a history of being politicized. I mean, as far as I knew, they were an ice cream factory.
And the shame is that it's damn nice ice cream as well. When I've had it in the past,
it's all right.
I think it's really nice.
All right, we're not here to sell Ben and Jerry's. They don't need the help. They've got the top sales of any ice cream in America. £163 million in 2020,
really?
I believe. And also, it went up 26% during lockdown because everybody just sat in their arse spending their
getting
furlough
fat,
money on ice cream.
I think they started as a co-op,
right?
As well, that's probably so. They were always had a bit of a political bent to them.
Well, like a shop.
Like a cooperative in terms of how they ran their business. But yeah, let's continue.
Yeah, cool. So basically Ben and Jerry's tweeted about the Rittenhouse trial, and I was like, "What? I thought you sold like chilled sweet lard, and I don't really understand why you're getting involved, like you're running for president." But they said the justice system is racist, and this proves it. So somehow a white guy shooting three white guys who are attacking him is racism. I don't know how that works. And how would this trial be going if he was a black 17-year-old that crossed state lines illegally carrying an AR-15 and shot three white protesters?
If he was defending himself.
So yeah, my reply was if he was black and he shot the same three white men, you're like a paedophile, an armed white guy, and some other armed white guy, you'd name an ice cream after him, which I thought was pithy. But it got me banned from Instagram, so I put a screenshot of it on Instagram, and it says, so if you scroll down, your post goes against the community guidelines of always saying the right thing, and following rules that are opaque and not transparent, and nobody knows what they are, but so we just arbitrarily remove stuff. So post removed for violence or dangerous organisation. So Ben and Jerry's, Instagram have come out and said it, what we're all thinking, Ben and Jerry's is a violent and dangerous organisation. But yeah, getting back to Ben and Jerry's and their tweet. I didn't realise they have a history of... it's a marketing campaign, obviously. They've seized the woke social media marketing, and they're just constantly doing these virtue signalling posts that get loads of retweets and loads of likes.
I love that they've actively tagged Preeti Patel in this. Like, the Home Office is going to be like, Ben and Jerry's are pushing again. Come on, Preeti, we need to get stuff done.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is back. This is going back a year. And so they're tweeting about, Preeti, we think the real crisis is our lack of humanity for people fleeing war. We pulled together a thread for you. And in the thread, they basically go on about how borders are wrong and everybody should be like, they sound like every white teenage girl on Instagram, basically. And so real politicians who have actually got the qualifications and the mandate to speak hit back. Here's James Cleverly. Good name.
Yep.
Good name. That's much, much better name than James Stupidly. But he said, can I have a large scoop of statistically inaccurate virtue signalling with my grossly overpriced ice cream, please? Bam! Slammed. And if we go down, we can see Ben and Jerry's. If we go to the next one, sorry. And again. This is the same one. But so they want open borders. But if we go to the next one, The next one. So this is the Ben and Jerry's factory tour. And guess what? It's got a big gate round it. A big fence round it. And a gate that
locks.
That border.
My God.
And then you get inside that border. They've got another border. The building's got walls. And it's got these like hinged like sort of flaps on it. But they lock.
What?
They try and stop people coming in.
Rank hypocrisy.
Who aren't allowed to be there.
Good
which,
God.
You know, which I find disgusting. I think everybody should be allowed to go to Ben & Jerry's and take whatever they want.
Open borders for fatties.
Open borders for Ben & Jerry's. So they're hugely hypocritical. And you should definitely, if anybody's watching, you can righteously shoplift and riot and burn. Are we allowed to say you can burn down Ben & Jerry's? Well, you can. I mean, it's probably going to take a while to burn. It's made out of ice cream. It's not going to burn. You can shoplift. Melt it. You can shoplift from Ben and Jerry's. Yeah, you can stick your finger up your bum and then touch the ice cream. But like I dug through the history of Ben and Jerry's tweet. Sometimes I agree with it. You know, this Veterans Day, it's time to stop incarcerating veterans. So you know, I think veterans do need more support for mental health. You know, there is a tendency to just discard people when you know they've come out of active service. Mm-hmm. And obviously, man, like you know, people could talk about PTSD. I mean, I told my girlfriend this morning, I was like, I've got PTSD from living on the Metropolitan line. You know what I mean? God. Everybody just shaking when I Google like the line status and stuff. I missed a gig on Friday. Missed a wonderful gig, Comedy Carnival in Covent Garden. I left to get there an hour and a half early, but because the Metropolitan line is so terrible, I missed this. I got there too late, and now you know promoter probably hates me and stuff. But yeah, so I'll skip through these because there's loads of them. So this is all the things that Ben and Jerry's think is racist. They think everything is racist. So COVID restrictions are racist, even though, as far as I know, in letter and in law, they're not racist. They're applied evenly to everyone. The next one, policing is racist. So defund the police. Defend black communities, which is exactly what Kyle Rittenhouse was doing.
Well, yeah.
You know, and then when it's actually applied in practice, when somebody steps in to fill the void created by the police stepping back and allowing rioters and looters to come in and destroy you know, black-owned businesses, then you know, somebody steps in to help them, and they get criticised for it. Apparently, it's a bad idea then. And the next one is also, yeah, like the police are racist again. The next one, prisons are racist. Prison industrial complex is racist. It's a good name for ice cream, by the way. The next one, prisons are still racist. We've got to close the wasteful and racist jail in St. Louis and send them all to the Ben & Jerry's factory where the doors will be open.
Like
the
next Lumpers.
The next one, yeah, they can work in. The next one, contracts with private prison companies is prisons are racist. The next one, prisons are racist. The next one, elections are racist.
I think that's just America is racist. That
yeah, they
nice
say
they broad brush.
They basically say elections are racist. Here's our take on the election, because everybody was wondering what some ice cream vendor, was thinking about the election. It's like Jesus Christ. Just I mean, I understand people can have a platform and you know use the platform, but you literally make ice cream. Yeah. You don't even if you were involved in anything, if you're like a newspaper or just something to do with opinion and fact and stuff, mm-hmm. but you're not. You literally just make like just really unhealthy ice cream.
Who scrolls through the Ben & Jerry's Twitter feed and goes, thank God, now I am informed?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the next one, voting laws are racist.
Of course, yeah.
There's not much that Ben & Jerry's think isn't racist. The next one, society is racist. The next one, shameful rhetoric is racist. I'm not even sure what they're talking about. Racism is a virus. It's not a virus. It's literally not a virus. A virus, oh God, I mean, like, you can't inoculate yourself against racism. You can't have some sort of jab. You can't get some sort of racism passport. Actually, that's a lie. I've got a certificate of non-racism. I'm the only comedian in the UK who's certified non-racist.
So everybody else is racist?
Well, I can't say that for sure.
But you've not seen their passport.
The only thing I can say for sure is that I am not racist because I've got the certificate.
You should bring it in next time.
Yeah,
I
will.
Just to prove it.
I will. I know you'll be very relieved when you see it.
Thank God, we were so worried.
So, this is funny. So this is about Asian American racism, because after, Black Lives Matter, you know, there's a big, like, companies were giving give people a day off if they're, like, my friend works at a company that gave everybody who's black a day off to, you know, have time to,
so they,
you
can
know,
recover,
think about, you know, think about stuff and, you know, do whatever community work or whatever, or, you know, as the, you know, my mate did, who's black, played video games. But then there was some sort of you know, there's the Asian American thing, like back in March, and there's racism against Asian Americans. So the same company basically just sent an email out to everyone saying, "Look, okay, Asian people can do the Asian workers can do the same. You can also have a day off. You know what I mean?" But in a really sort of, you know, resigned.
Only white people work today. There you go. Sorted.
But
racism,
no, I mean,
sold.
It's just the sort of pattern, right? And the way they sort of grudged it. They sort of, you know, they're like, okay, you can also have a day off. You know, it's that kind of tone.
But the Asians are our best workers, damn.
that's racist. I think the Scots are the best workers.
I must have left my certificate at home.
Yeah, and next tab. If we go up. I think this is actually the same. It's the same one. It's the same thread. The next one. So ice cream that isn't this ice cream is also racist. So this is Change is Brewing. This has got fudge brownies, marshmallow swirls, and a movement to invest in black communities instead of racist systems of policing. Now that's sweet. I mean, come on. It's ice cream. It's ice cream. Stop trying to be Maya Angelou. It's ice cream. Okay, next. Next thread, schools are racist. Schools are racist as well. Next thread, some guy called Steve King is racist. Don't even know who he is. I bet he's not even racist, you know?
Not that Steve King, just a different Steve
King. He's not the writer. Not the writer. So yeah, and obviously Ben and Jerry's, they've famously got an ice cream on the next one that's got Colin Kaepernick on it called Change the World. Change the World. So fighting for justice for black and brown communities is hard work. Celebrating the pursuit of a more just tomorrow with Colin Kaepernick's Change the World non-dairy ice cream. So I mean, you know, this is them virtue signaling. I mean, it's basically them like riding off the back of the Black Lives Matter movement to get free advertising, which is pretty cynical.
I mean,
bear in mind Ben and Jerry's they're not just a private company. They're owned by Unilever, which is a global, you know, multinational conglomerate. Mm-hmm. These guys don't care about anything except money, and they've found a way to make money and get cheap advertising through these social media campaigns riding on the back of social justice. So this is pure advertising.
Oh yeah. You know, and Kaepernick does not ever miss an opportunity to have his face plastered on something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And Colin Kaepernick, if we move on to the next one. So he's recently.
Oh God, here we go.
He's recently compared. I mean, considering this guy's the, you know, the figurehead, the fighter for racial justice, he's compared the NFL to slavery. Bear in mind, the NFL, you know, the American Football League, the players earn tens of millions. Like Tom Brady's on like 41 million. So they make insane amounts of money. And also, they're at liberty to leave.
Yes.
They're
and
not
they earn
slaves.
More than the coaches. I don't remember any time in the slave markets where the slaves were earning more than the people selling them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And a quote from, if we move on to the next one. This is still in the same one. So this is a quote from Colin Kaepernick. What they don't want you to understand is what's being established is a power dynamic. Before they put you on the field, teams poke, prod, and examine you, searching for any defect that might affect your performance. No boundary respected, no dignity left intact. So he thought that was the same as slaves being poked and prodded. But when you're a high-level sports player, of course you're going to get all the scans and all the medical checks. Quite often, like a lot of companies have medical checks. When I had a proper job, I had a medical check to make sure, you know, I wasn't going to fall down dead, or if there's anything the private medical had to be concerned about. And if you're competing at a very elite level, you know, minor injuries can affect your performance. So that before they spend like tens of millions of dollars on you, they need to check that, you know, your knee isn't going to blow up on your first run.
I doubt they're going to get Krause from the Rittenhouse case to go and do the quarterback for the NFL, for instance.
Yeah, exactly, because they poke and prod him and realize that he's a fat shit. So And Kaepernick as well. He shills for Nike. He's the face of Nike. So you can see here Nike shoes or Nike. Did you say Nike or Nike?
I say Nike.
Nike. Let's say Nike then. And if we go up and see the headline, go just go up. Nike actually uses real slaves, okay. genuine slaves. There's more slavery now in the world than there was at the height of the transatlantic slave trade, by the way.
Oh, really?
But it's not been done by...
Is that a different definition of slavery, or...?
No, it's basically... there's a lot of forced labor, and there's a lot of, indentured servitude and stuff as well.
Oh, yeah,
but, if you go to Libya, there's open slave markets. Just actual slaves who've been taken from sub-Saharan villages and places like that, and being sold at market. In the Middle East, there's slavery, and in the Far East as well, there's a lot of child labour and very unethical working practices. But in China, in particular, so China obviously is committing. It's been described as a genocide by America, possibly by the United Nations. So the Uyghur Muslims who are being persecuted by China, they're having their whole culture, way of life wiped out. They're also there's horrific things going out. There's rape. There's sort of forced breeding programs. Just real, horrific things. Concentration camps, and in the concentration camps, they're forced into slave labor.
Yeah.
Actual slave labor. They're not being. It's not indentured. Servitude, actual forced slave labor, unpaid, treated, worked till you die.
Yeah, terrible
just
stuff.
Horrific stuff. And who uses it? Nike. Nike have been using slave labor in China. Absolutely disgusting stuff. And they've also used child labor, if we move to the next one. So there's still labor abuses at Chinese factories for Nike and stuff. I think if you scroll down, you see Nike mentioned. And the next one this is a famous photo.
Wow.
This is Time magazine. So this is a 12-year-old boy, Tariq. Tariq in Pakistan, sewing Nike footballs. This appeared, not Time magazine, Life magazine. And this brought a lot of public attention onto Nike to stop them using child labor and slave labor. Otherwise, they'd still do it because they're a company that wants to make money, and their whole business model is based on the ethos of using the absolute cheapest labor to produce their incredibly expensive branded goods. And then they've got more money to pay to their elite stars such as Colin Kaepernick to advertise these goods that are made by forced slave labor and child labor. So Colin Kaepernick as well. If we move on to the next one, he calls for abolishing police in prisons in an essay. So he started doing essays now. I can't wait to read them. And also the next one, he wants to replace them with community policing. Ben and Jerry's want to... Oh, wait, that's the same thing again. Next one?
Next one.
Maybe it's not on there. He supports replacing them with community policing, which is exactly what Kyle Rittenhouse was doing.
Yep.
He was protecting his community. Ben and Jerry's have tweeted about his trial. So actually, that's why it went back to that one. Nice little, we're closing the loop there. So Ben and Jerry's constantly tweeting about race, constantly tweeting about racism, but it's actually Ben and Jerry's who are racist. So if we move on to the next tab, Ben and Jerry's milk and cookies ice cream, incredibly high in sugar. The information, nutrition information there. 31 grams per 100 grams is sugar. So half a tub would be 77.5 grams of sugar, which is, I don't think half a tub is sort of what you'd eat in a sitting, I mean?
Yeah, generally.
This contains 8 servings. Oh, this lasagna feeds a family of 8. No, it doesn't. I eat the whole thing.
It eats me.
Yeah.
It feeds me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Stop describing me. Stop trying to identify me as a family of 4. I identify as a man of 1. So incredibly high in sugar. Like the safe amount, if we move to the next tab, the safe amount of sugar to eat per day, according to the American Heart Association, is 37.5 grams of sugar if you're a man, 25 grams if you're a woman. So, half a tub of this stuff contains like twice, or if you're a woman, like 3 times as much sugar as you can have. And sugar, of course, causes obesity. Sorry.
No problem.
It causes obesity and other loads of health problems, inflammatory problems, all kinds of health problems, rots your teeth and all the rest of it. But it also causes diabetes. And if we move to the next tab, ethnicity and type 2 diabetes. So people from Black African, African Caribbean, and South Asian backgrounds are at a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes, which is developed through the consumption of refined carbohydrates and sugar, especially sugar. Sugar leads to a direct spike in insulin levels. I mean,
there's a good point to be made here, which is that these sorts of people, especially the activist Ben and Jerry's types, always go on about how it's structural inequalities and the disparities in the results is what makes it racist. So you are correct that Ben and Jerry's are feeding white people and black people and Asian people ice cream, all of the same kind, but it is disproportionately affecting black and minority ethnic. Therefore, Ben and Jerry's, you are racist.
Exactly. And also they're woke virtue signaling riding on the back of Black Lives Matter. They're trying to align themselves with BAME communities. And so they're selling, they're actively promoting it to BAME communities, which is targeting BAME communities and is resulting in deaths in BAME communities from diabetes. So according to the CDC, the next tab, according to the CDC, diabetes is the seventh leading cause of death in the USA, and there are nearly 80,000 deaths each year due directly to diabetes. So Ben and Jerry's their sales have gone up 26% during lockdown, during all the Black Lives Matter stuff, because they cleverly jumped on it. And I mean, I don't have the exact stats, but I mean, I think if we broke down the increase in sales, I think, given that they've hijacked the Black Lives Matter movement and other social justice movements, and they're using Colin Kaepernick to advertise, they're targeting BAME communities. They're causing, and this is a serious thing, they're causing more deaths. They're directly responsible.
They're killing a community.
They're killing a community with diabetes.
Shame.
Absolutely shameful and racist targeting. Ben and Jerry's marketing policy of deliberately targeting BAME consumers is racist, and it's killing them. And that's I hate to end on such a somber point, but that's genuinely what's happening here.
Put the spoon down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So.
And the skateboard.
Yes. Let's move on, shall we? So if you're living in America currently, you'll probably be aware that if you go into any shops or, for instance, head into a gas station, there might be a little bit of a shortage of basically everything. Well, thankfully, Bloomberg is here with a solution. Don't worry about it. Just get less stuff. They've got here, it's conventional wisdom that the US economy is built on Americans' endless appetite to buy lots of stuff. Household consumption makes up 67% of GDP. When the economy falters, we're told to spending is our patriotic duty. But it doesn't have to be this way. We need to live more like Europeans. What that means exactly, I don't really know. And the actual article itself goes into a bit more detail, saying Americans can't spend like they used to. Store shelves are emptying and it can take months to find a car, refrigerator or sofa. And we need to live more like the Europeans as a result. Now, see, the problem with that is I am not too adverse to the idea of people should stop being such mindless consumers. I think we should all do better to maybe keep a tighter hold on our wallets and purses and maybe not spend so much on meaningless trash that we spend a lot of money on in these sorts of times. But there's a difference between spending your money on random knickknacks and Ben and Jerry's, for instance, that you don't necessarily need, and being able to afford to buy and being able to find a fridge, for instance. Those are kind of more essential products that you need.
This is the issue I have with the Bloomberg article, because it's quite classist, because it's assuming that, you know, spending, household consumer spending is a frippery. And it's not. Yeah. Household consumer spending is people buying things that they essentially need to live. So cleaning products, food, all the rest of it.
Yeah, but there are questions of what's caused this, what have been the multi-layered factors that have gone into causing all of these shortages, and there are a few things that I personally would suggest, one being vaccine mandates causing people who don't necessarily want to get vaccinated to be forced out of their jobs and positions, and you can see it all the way from people in gas stations and nursing homes all the way up to people in like the NFL and NBA getting forced out of their positions because of the fact that they've just decided, no, it's not for me, I don't really need it. And that's not to comment anything on the efficacy of vaccines or anything like that. That's just the mandates that have come about. And there's also supply chain issues, for instance. But we'll get into that in a moment. It does, but it also sounds like the Biden infrastructure bill, which is coming forward, doesn't seem to be actually addressing anything regarding this. They're all just saying like, oh, here's this big infrastructure bill. The government will take care of everything for you. We'll nurture you. We'll take you under our wing.
Yeah.
You'll never have to fend for yourself or take responsibility for anything again. It's not helping.
Well, some of it will help, but the timescales are very long. If we're going to, we're, you know,
and the amount
fixing
of money.
Bridges and stuff, then, you know, that's a very long-term solution. But I mean, a lot of this supply chain problem is a result of green policy and the chronic underinvestment in oil and gas, which the economy still needs.
We'll go into into a little bit of that in a moment. And I also really hate the patronizing tone that comes here. I mean, so far everything related to the Biden regime has been coming at the public with an incredibly patronizing tone of voice. I find that doesn't sort of endear one to the person patronizing them. It also comes across a little bit like a psyop. It comes across a little bit like the "you will own nothing and like it" mentality that we see spreading currently. If we move on next here, we can see Jen Psaki has insisted that the vaccine mandate will not lead to staff shortages. I mean, I don't know how you could back that up at all. From the article itself,
It's already leading to staff shortages, particularly in healthcare, where people are, you know, needed so much. And apparently, NHS or health.
We're seeing it in the UK at the moment.
Healthcare systems are so under stress because of coronavirus.
It won't lead to staff shortages, John has pointed out, if the businesses are already closed. Yeah. Good point there.
But then there might be a shortage of things you need from that business.
Exactly. But yeah, what you were saying there, we've seen it in the UK already, that certain jobs that are becoming mandated that you need a vaccine to be able to perform your duties in, the nursing homes are struggling to be able to keep up the staff because loads of people who have got conviction for their beliefs are going, well, okay, no then. And then they're just leaving the job.
Yeah.
And then the nursing home is stuck without anybody to staff it, which is not beneficial for the people who need work and also not beneficial for the people that they're looking after.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
A bad situation all around.
The people who are being looked after are the worst affected. Because if you're a nursing home and you're having intimate care, it's not just something that you can get a temp in. It's not, you know, you have a relationship with a person who's washing you and providing all that. And you know, these people are very vulnerable, and
they don't want to
change. You don't want a stranger suddenly come in and like.
Yeah, they don't want to have to rebuild those relationships.
Yeah.
But yeah, this article goes into a bit more detail. The White House press secretary Jen Psaki on Friday insisted President Joe Biden's COVID vaccine mandate would not lead to staffing shortages as she returned to the briefing room 13 days after she tested positive for COVID. I'm sure she's vaccinated. She still had to take some time.
She's got that natural immunity now.
Oh, yeah. But the Labour Department announced Friday that a record 4.4 million people quit their jobs in September, or about 3% of the nation's workforce. So when you put it into that 3%, it doesn't sound that much, but 4.4 million is a lot of people. I don't see how that won't be leading to certain sectors of the economy becoming understaffed. She also downplayed a question as to whether that number might increase if workers quit rather than get their COVID vaccine, a federal mandate that will go into place in January. I think that's the one where it's going to be any company that has over 100 employees, they're going to have to mandate it. She argued that many companies have already implemented a mandatory vaccine policy, such as McDonald's, GE, I don't know who they are, Google, and United Airlines, and they haven't seen workers leave their jobs at all. Conveniently leaving out Southwest Airlines, which had a big strike on behalf of the pilots who didn't want to get the vaccines and didn't want to adhere to mandates. I believe did they end up getting their way?
I'm not sure, but it would certainly cause a huge amount of disruption to the services. And other companies, like my girlfriend just started a and she's like, even though they're working remotely, I think 4 days a week. There's a vaccine mandate.
Yeah, and it's not helping businesses and it's not helping people.
It's not helping.
It's not helping
it's
anything,
not helping the
really.
Vaccine rollout, because I don't want to get a vaccine because they're forcing it on me. You know what I mean?
I'm of the same attitude, personally.
It's like if I go into like a shop, I remember I went into to buy a car and the guy, I was like, oh, can I, you know, what about these cars? And he's like, no, you want to get this, you want to do that. And it's like, no, I asked you about this car. He's like, no, you want to get that, you've got to get it on finance, you've got to do that. It's like, no, I told you, I've got the money, I don't want to get finance, I want to, you know, just buy. Man, if somebody's trying to force something on you, we all know that can't, because if something's really good, people seek it out and get it themselves.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then there's the way that the various ways the White House is trying to play off these shortages that are going on. So if we skip along, we've got a clip here of Jen Psaki trying to explain herself. If you want to play a little bit of this, John.
You said that it's a workers' market and that some industries need to create more competitive packages, that it's a good thing people have more choices. Is that your way of saying that the White House doesn't view this as a problem at all?
I think I also said in response to Weasel's question that there are some industries where we're seeing labor shortages. There are a couple of reasons for that. But some of the people, the workers, and we've seen this statistically and on a lot of surveys, many people across the country feel this is a good time to change jobs, right? To look for a more competitive job. What I'm saying is ultimately that's a good thing. It is challenging in certain industries.
If you want to stop that there. So that just says it all, really. They've found a way to try and twist the logic to say that people who are losing their jobs and causing shortages in these industries is a good thing. It means that other people can apply for those jobs. It's opening up the economy for people to be able to change jobs. That's ridiculous.
An interesting interpretation. She should be in the prosecution of Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah, maybe. Then there's this from October where they were saying about how port issues and delays are causing supply chain issues that are resulting in a shortage of supplies, which is one of the reasons if you're in America, you might see some of these shelves in your local supermarkets not being stocked. And they make a statement here saying that the White House is prepared. It's not an issue. Don't worry about it. Stop asking questions. Pretty typical response from them. And they also make a notice of, there's lots of different layers to these problems. There's lots of different layers. But isn't it interesting that a lot of these layers didn't really start to pile up, seemingly, until Biden stepped into the White House? It seems to have all started to factor in all at the same time. And then if we move along, we've got this article here. There is a record-breaking number of container ships reported clogging up the California coast. And this is from Wednesday. So they say here, container ships continue to clog up California's coast despite the Biden administration's efforts to alleviate the supply chain crisis. With supply chain issues growing and the holiday season approaching, California ports have become even more clogged with vessels. Several vessels have been forced to sit outside the port, waiting for their chance to unload. President Joe Biden met with several leaders involved in the supply chain process, and in a video posted, he claimed that things are improving and that people should not be worried about the coming holidays. I mean, given his level of organizational skills demonstrated up to this point, I'm worrying a little bit. So,
Do you live in California?
Well, I mean, I'm worrying for the people in California and America because it says here, Los Angeles and Long Beach's docking ports have been consistently packed despite a recently passed edict from the White House ordering ports to unload container ships 24/7. The two ports account for an estimated 40% of all shipping containers entering into the United States. So if you're in America, no matter where you are, this is likely to affect you because 40% of all ported goods
come through California.
Yeah, so this is a massive problem. They made the point, if you skip over, that renewables didn't cause any of these shortage issues as well. They were saying it was an issue with fossil fuels like oil and coal. But that's why there's
an issue with fossil fuels, because everybody's been focusing on renewables. There's been no investment. I've got shares in oil companies because I was like, man, like we're getting new oil for a while yet. And especially, you know, with renewables, I mean, solar's great when it's daytime. Wind power is great when the wind's blowing. But, you know, if you want to fuel trucks and stuff, you need oil. Basically because there's this underinvestment in oil and like with the uptake in demand after COVID lockdowns ending, and the oil supply just wasn't there to rush back, especially with Russia sort of cutting supply to the West. It's caused this real crunch, this real squeeze, as you can see when you go and fill up your car.
Well, yeah. In America, I'm pretty sure gas prices have been skyrocketing recently.
It'll still be about a fifth what it is in the UK.
I was going to say, it's still putting us to shame, but they're still going up. And one of the ways that they've not been helping this was one of the first things that Biden did, of course, earlier on this year was stop the production of the Keystone pipeline that was going to be carrying oil from the straits in Canada down to America. That's it.
And it was stopped because of environmental devastation that it would cause, but actually it would cause less environmental devastation than transporting the oil by truck.
Yeah.
Because obviously transporting it by truck is inherently
you're going to be shooting more CO2 and you're going to be burning more
fuel.
Exactly.
There's going to be more leakages. There's more contact points. So the pipeline totally made sense.
Yeah. If we move along as well, you can see them trying to address this. And if you want to play this clip, because we've got this clip here, John, just is a short one.
Go ahead. Thank you. Two topics, all real quick. Is the White House rethinking their opposition to new pipeline projects since one really important one goes offline and gas stations start running dry?
I wouldn't say we look at it as it, through that prism, Peter. We look at it, we analyze both the impact, the economic impact, as well as the environmental impact. And that will certainly remain the case, but we look at different, each pipeline project individually.
So that's a no. Basically what that is right there is a no. And then we've got this next clip here we can just play a little bit of where she tries to put the blame onto other people for issues like the vaccine mandates and other such things. So if you want to play a little bit of this in regards to staffing shortages.
And do you know if this particular hospital might have been having staffing shortages because they have a vaccine mandate and maybe some folks have had to leave because they didn't want to get vaccinated?
I would love for you to account for me where that is the issue at, over more so than the number of unvaccinated who are filling emergency rooms, filling ICU beds. That is the problem in hospitals across the country. Go ahead.
Yeah. So she just completely skirts and deflects around the question right there. That's not what he asked. That's not the answer to what he asked. You asked him a question instead. Jen Psaki has this tendency, I've noticed whenever I've seen clips of her, to be asked a question she doesn't like and she will smugly ask another question, like reframing it in another
almost
way.
Almost as if she's a politician.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, they've also got this. They've got the nurse shortages going on in America. If we skip along again, CBS, they're saying that we're doing everything we can, using every lever, this is back from May, every lever of government to ensure we reduce the impact on the American. It was the American government that's caused a lot of these shortages in the process. So maybe if you step back, it might help to alleviate some of the burden that people are experiencing.
And also, don't forget, the government thinks that these shortages are a good thing because the government is you know, right behind the climate change agenda. So rising oil and gas prices, even though they harm the consumer and push families into poverty and you know, push businesses out of business, they reduce the consumption of oil and gas, which is seen as a good thing. If you're a Washington elite, you don't care about, you know, people being forced into poverty. I mean, you pretend you care, but you know, their main concern is like bringing down CO2 emissions.
Exactly. And then, if you skip along again, you can see it's gone from, this is also back in May. They're saying that at this point in time, I'll just reiterate, we don't have a supply issue. So the old tactic of just deny it's happening in the first place. If we skip along again, we've got more shortages of people because now it's not just affecting nurses and other such people. It's also affecting police officers and firefighters and other such people who are in positions, I would say, of utmost importance within society. I mean, this could be beneficial if you're an ACAB, defund the police kind of guy.
Yeah.
But it's not really great for anybody who, you know, suffers in a neighborhood where there's a lot of crime, for instance.
Yeah.
We've seen this in Seattle. I covered this a few weeks ago, where 8% of the police and firefighter force have left recently as a result of the vaccine mandates, and they all left their boots on the steps of City Hall in protest.
Yeah.
I'm sure the White House would characterize these people as all evil. They're trying to hurt everybody by not sticking to our mandates.
Yeah.
What they did instead of going to their job because they were kicked out, they all decided to go and feed the homeless instead.
Yeah, yeah.
What bastards,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, the firefighters and stuff. As if, like, you know, if you're burning, if you're in a fire, and, like, you know, a fireman sends his ladder up to the seventh floor where you are, you're going to be like, have you had your booster jab?
Yeah.
I'm not getting on the ladder unless you've had your booster jab.
I'll take
jab.
My chances with the flames.
Yeah, I know I've been vaccinated and that protects me, but if you haven't had your booster jab, then, you know.
Yeah. But also, like, is it really great to let this sort of stuff happen in cities like Seattle, which had enough problems last year with everything that was going on? And then just finally, we had the former secretary during the Trump presidency, Sarah Sanders, saying that the Biden regime is an absolute and abysmal failure, saying that they're completely incompetent, the Biden administration is a complete and total failure, and the defining characteristic of the administration is incompetency.
Well, I think, I mean, because Trump was completely incompetent, but that led to good government because he was so incompetent.
The government couldn't do anything.
Government couldn't function, which is the perfect government.
That's
not
brilliant.
Getting stuck in any people's lives and causing problems, because I've got to tell you, there's no situation that isn't made worse by government involvement. So with this administration, because they can't actually do things, their incompetence has a measurable impact.
Yes,
they're they're actually sort of getting things messed and
just,
up.
Just to leave it on what Sarah here has said, there's no doubt that everything happening in the Biden administration is a complete and total failure. Mm. And I've got to say, I agree. There we go. Let's move on to the video comments.
This video comment is in response to currently unnamed's video comment from last Friday. Do you know what else is for Josh? Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. On a serious note, one of the best white pills that happened last week was the announcement that the University of Austin, Texas would be started and it will be doing a liberal arts education degree. So far it has had over 30,000 inquiries from college professors.
Hmm. Oh, sounds good.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one.
Joni D and Little Joe with another Legend of the Pines. Soupy Island, a sanitarium used to treat children with tuberculosis. It was built in 1887, called Soupy Island because the lunch ladies there made soup. Eventually, it was turned into an amusement park. The Campbell Soup Company and the Globetrotters had to save it financially, but you can go there now. The original pool from the basement of the sanitarium
like
is still there.
Park,
if you'd like to see Soupy Island, it's open from 9 to 3.
Soviet Russia? Like
that sounds pretty cool, to be fair. Sounds interesting.
You saw the pictures. No, it sounds interesting. I like the story.
Given some of the ones that he's gone over recently, I was expecting it, especially given it, if it was a hospital back in the day, I was expecting it to be some haunted sort of place.
I'm not sure it's not haunted.
Well, it might be.
Yeah.
And what's your feeling on haunted places? Are you a believer? Are you a skeptic like I am?
The thing is, I believe in like the human spirit, so I believe there's some beyond the physical world. Because I spoke to the Oxford professor of philosophy of physics, and he was trying to convince me that free will is an illusion.
Oh, Josh would agree with it.
Everything is, yeah. Obviously, free will's not an illusion. Obviously, free will exists. Why would you do it? Why would you get up in the morning? Everything's going to happen anyway. And why do we have a criminal justice system? Why is Kyle Rittenhouse on trial? It was going to happen anyway.
You should have moderated on Carl and Josh's debate on this.
A deterministic model of the universe is just completely anathema to me. I've worked in criminal justice. There's no point to life if everything's deterministic. We might all just let as well lay down in the street because it's going to happen anyway.
What, like that Radiohead video? Do you know the one I'm on no. about? Never mind. But I agree with you. Let's carry on.
I think now we have a very feminine totalitarianism. Like the whole COVID thing is a perfect example of this overbearing mother that keeps you from living.
Keine Veranstaltungen mehr, keine Messen, keine Konzerte und vorerst auch keine Schule mehr. Keine Universität, kein Kindergarten, kein Spiel auf einem Spielplatz. Niemand ist verzichtbar. Alle zählen. Es braucht unser aller Anstrengung.
See, I've not watched that interview with Philip Tanzer, but I absolutely agree with what he's saying. I made the comparison when I've been talking about the infrastructure bill in America, and you see all of the promises that are coming as a result of that, and they're saying, like, oh, from birth till death, the government will have your back, you'll have government-sponsored programs for all your kids, free education, free this and free that. And I'm saying it's the opposite of, like, what you could call the nurturing father style of government, where they'll make sure you're all right, but they'll push you off and let you be responsible for yourself. It is very much the overbearing mother style of government, and Angela Merkel is a good example of that.
Do you want to hear my joke about her?
Yes, absolutely.
I've got a triangular pubic wig. It's an angular Merkin. But yeah, this whole collectivist thing, I don't like it. It's coming through with all the lockdown stuff, and it's pretty unnecessary. We know it's unnecessary because we've got Sweden, which hasn't done it.
Yeah.
And, I just feel people can manage their own risk. And, what we all think. But it's quite sinister handing so much power to the state and removing so many individual rights. You know, even if it's got, like, noble intentions, I think it's dangerous.
It speaks to me in that sort of voice that you hear somebody going, like, can't we all get along? And it's like, no, I don't want to get along with everybody. No, leave me alone.
Yeah. I mean, that's a terrible argument, but, like...
well, still.
We should all get along. But
to a certain degree.
The government's boundaries stop where, you know, we should have autonomy. Because we've got free will. We need to exercise it.
There you go.
The other thing that's coming through with collectivism is green policy. So that's the government, you know, the nanny state.
I think you've looked at some of the cop stuff as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I did a video about it on my YouTube.
Yeah. Did you see that big creepy doll that they had?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was so weird, wasn't
it? Yeah,
man. Anyway, we should probably get on to the next video comment.
Once in a while, I will choose to cook for myself. It is easy. The necessary kitchen equipment is delivered at my door within minutes. Since transport became free, we stopped having all those things stuffed into our homes. Why keep a pasta maker and a crepe cooker crammed in our cupboards? We can just order them when we need them.
You are a Class 7 person, and on your way up. Class 7 consumption, Murray. It is your duty as a Class 7 consumer to consume, Murray, the ration of consumer goods allocated by the state as befits your status.
It really does come across like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Did you see that weird Forbes article that Josh was reading out there?
No, it wasn't satirical or anything.
No, it was written by someone from the World Economic Forum, because of course it was. And it's basically describing this horrific, totalitarian, dystopian future where the government does everything for you. But it was trying to sell it to you.
As if it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I look like a sleazy car salesman right now, but that was the sleaziest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah, it's weird. Anyway.
Yeah, and also, in living history, we've had rationing in the UK. We've had the government saying what you can and can't. I know, obviously, there's reasons for that. You know, post-war, we had our own supply chain squeeze, but caused by German U-boats. We've had it before. I think we've been lulled into a false sense of security by the sort of golden years of prosperity and freedom since the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's move on.
End of the Wayfarer, to answer your question, yes, they are a bunch of cheaters. Jeff Bozo and the D.E. Shore hedge fund made money out of exploiting loopholes and inefficiencies in the financial market, which is fair enough, I guess. But David E. Shore is a very intelligent, cunning man. But look into his wife, who doesn't share the same surname. She worked very closely with Obama, contributed loads to mainstream media, and the D.E. Shore hedge fund contributed a lot of money to the Hillary Clinton campaign. So you can tell exactly what kind of people they are. Scum.
I don't know enough about Bezos' history or David E. Shore, but if everything that was said there is true, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they're clever. They exploit the loopholes in, like, you've seen it with tax law, employment law, and stuff. But I just think, you know, that shows that's where the government needs to tighten up some loopholes in the law. That's government. Companies are supposed to do everything they can to maximize profit for the shareholders within the regulatory framework. If the regulatory framework needs to be improved, then do it. That's one area where, you know, the government can actually do some good.
All right. For
you, I'm tying in a 200 amp residential panel. The red and black wires are the hot wires. The white wire is neutral. There's 120 volts from hot to neutral, and 240 volts from hot to hot. The wire is a 4-aught aluminum. The little white bottle you see me using is an antioxidization compound that you have to put on all aluminum wires. I didn't think to put the camera on until after I had the wires in the box, unfortunately.
Nice. That's really cool. I don't really know what it's for.
What is that, a heating thing?
I don't really know. I'm honestly intimidated sometimes by the fact that most of our gold tier members sending these videos in are obviously so much more intelligent than I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it did look cool. It looked like a sideways TV.
Did it?
Yeah, from the back.
From the back. Yeah. But yeah, let's move on.
Hey, so this is for Harry. Carl mentioned that you are doing a premium podcast on some heart issues that have been coming up amongst the population, primarily among young men recently. And if you are looking for some help, I would be more than happy to donate my time. I can give you lots and lots of resources and give you a crash course in cardiology if you like. You just let me know what you need and I can probably get it to you.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you very much for your offer of help. I might be in touch in that case.
Hey, guys. So I've got a solution for the Met's racism and our border force. What we'll do is take all the racists from the Met and put them in the border force, take all the terrible lefties from the border force and put them in the Met. Problem solved. In other news, I'm working on some C.S. Cooper fanfic. I say fan. Commissioned Trim to do some artwork, so you can look forward to seeing that soon.
What is that thing he's in? I've seen that before. I'm sure he's done a video comment before.
I don't know what that thing is. It looks vast, industrial, and imposing.
It does, yeah. Almost like it's just like a greenhouse, but for growing like sequoia trees or something, or possibly some sort of power generation or transport thing. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hey guys, my iPad, the original one, was broken for the anniversary, so I couldn't actually celebrate with you all. So consider it's a bit late, but not got any good whiskey in the house, so wine. Hope you like the suit. I got it originally for my grandma Barbara's funeral on my dad's side, so yeah. Oh god. I don't have French or American wine. Apparently French wine is really gay. I'm gonna get the Australian stuff.
You can't use gay as a pejorative anymore.
Pretty gay there, Leo.
No, it's not gay. Gay is no. When you suck a man's dick.
I'm glad I'm not the only Harry who decided to dress up today, and thank you very much for the celebration of
if you
the
wore
one
that
year.
To my funeral, I'd come back to life and slap the shit out of you.
Well, I'm just glad to hear I'd get an invite.
The glare, the shine off your jacket would dazzle people. They'd stumble into my coffin.
I want to say one last goodbye up close and personal.
Is it true that anybody can go to a funeral?
I don't know. I've only been to a few myself. Yeah. I've never really been walking past a funeral and had the temptation to just join the crowd.
Be a funeral crasher.
Yeah, just like...
I think the rule is that anybody can go to a funeral.
I suppose if you can just fit in and just like start tearing up a little bit,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, and some of the sandwiches.
Yeah. That's what you're in it for. Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's move on to some of the written comments. And on that, we've got the Rittenhouse stuff. Sean Nash.
Why do you advertise an ad blocker on your... Or do you not have adverts on your thing?
I don't know. I don't think this shows up on the stream.
Oh, so. Right.
Yeah, I think people are going to be very confused hearing that.
Lotus Eaters don't approve of ad blockers when you're watching their content. If it's got, does it have adverts on it?
What? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Adverts. No,
they
we
approve,
don't.
Lotus Eaters approve of ad blockers.
Yes, we do. Yes. Sean Nash, the prosecutor playing with his guns is effing priceless. The guy should be hauled into the dock himself for such gross negligence. Once again, the guy could have pulled a full Baldwin right there.
Can you imagine? Oh my God. You think there's a parallel reality where that actually happened? That'd be amazing.
I kind of hope so.
Oh my God.
As mean as it sounds, that would be really funny.
Oh,
to see the shocked look on everyone's
face.
That'd
be an event. You know what I mean?
And then he just goes over to the defense side and like, I would like to stand witness to myself, please.
I request a recess.
Yeah. Tom Y, Kyle only let Grosskreutz live so that he could deliver the message to the rest of Antifa. I mean, I would like that to be true. It's primarily just because, you know, it was circumstances. He just got his bicep blown off. Yeah. But that would be pretty cool if he had done that. Yeah. It's very impressive that we talk about community policing, which is what the left want.
Yeah.
One of the things the left always talks about when it comes to actual policing is, why don't they just shoot to disarm?
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle did.
Yeah.
That's literally what he did there. He disarmed him, that's for sure.
He didn't shoot that arm, he shot disarm.
That's true. That's all right. Spadroon to rape.
That guy had a gun.
Oh, yeah, he had a gun. He was about to point. They got him on the stand to admit that he was Rittenhouse only opened fire when he pointed the gun at his face.
Yeah. So, I mean, prosecution are like, oh, why didn't he use his fists?
No.
Like,
yeah. Well, I mean,
17-year-old's going to fight off a paedophile, an angry paedophile. Some guy with a skateboard, the guy with a gun. Like with his fists.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, the prosecution was busy with its head in its hand. I mean, that guy Krause, there's the famous image of him now just face palming after their star witness blew up their entire case.
Yeah.
Spadroon to rapiers. I'd just like to point out, you turn up to a war with a civilian AR-15, you'll be leaving in a bag before you've even seen an enemy soldier. Weapon of war, my rear end. Well, yeah, I mean,
I look like a weapon of war to me.
It looks cool. I think
what's the difference? Is it like it doesn't have the rapid fire rate?
Yeah, it's a semi-automatic, which means it fires as quickly as you can pull the trigger. So it will only fire a single round, unlike something like, I mean, I'm going to show up my lack of knowledge of guns here. I think like an AK-47, a fully automatic rifle, you pull the trigger and it'll fire as fast as it fires.
Yeah, but the thing with a fully automatic is like most of the time we're never going to use it on fully automatic because you've got no control over it and also you're going to rattle through your bullets in a matter of like seconds.
Yeah, I think the other thing is not the like AR-15, despite how cool it looks, actually has a pretty low caliber type of bullet. It's only a little bit more powerful than your standard handgun, from what I'm aware, which is one of the reasons why it's such a popular production gun for a lot of people to buy. But yeah, I agree, for the most part it's not going to be too effective taking that into a war zone. Student of history to my fellow Americans, in reference to St. Kyle of Kenosha and the trial, it isn't just Kyle on your trial, it's your right to self-defense. P.S. I'll see your punt gun and raise you a cannon, which is not regulated at all and can be legally owned. That'd be pretty great. The rioters all show up to your front lawn and you wheel out your cannon.
Yeah, don't give Islamist terrorists any ideas. You know what I mean? They'll be like, you know, getting in a taxi with a cannon. saying, can we go to the women's hospital, please?
It'd be pretty obvious at that point.
Yeah, just fire it straight through the side of the taxi. Don't even open the door.
Just wind the window down, just stick it out. No.
Like a galleon.
But yeah, I agree. What is obviously the kind of defining factor of this is that the prosecution is kind of trying to destroy the very idea of self-defense. If you bring a gun with you to defend yourself but end up using that gun to defend yourself, that somehow means you forfeit your right to self-defense. Absolute nonsense. But they are trying to destroy the very foundations of the Second Amendment through this case. It is an attack on American values, as far as I can see it. George Windsor, in a crowd of heroes, Kyle shot three criminals. We need to replace the police, border security, and Secret Service with 17-year-olds. I think this is your plan, actually, isn't it? Give everyone in Glasgow guns and they'll all sort themselves out.
Yeah, I'll go on holiday for a bit and then, you know.
Yeah, get back and you've got the cream of the crop.
Battle Royale.
Oh God. M1 ping. Rosenbaum didn't even rape any kids that night. Bingo, probably. I mean, that's unconfirmed as far as I'm aware. Kevin Fox, how great would it have been when Binger picked up the AR-15 and pointed it at the jury, not having first checked it was cleared, had actually fired it. Can't see there being a rush of people stepping up to defend him. Max Clifford isn't available to help him. Yeah, once again, the meme, that would have been hilarious. Tragic, yet hilarious. Student of history, everyone takes a beating sometimes. Hopefully he doesn't have a domestic case anytime soon. That could be a problem. That's true. A lot of the people following him are, I think this may be misinformation, but I'm pretty sure I've seen Grosskrautz, the guy who got his arm blown off. Somebody posted his rap sheet to Twitter, and one of the things that was when he was 18 years old, he like beat up his grandmother to get money.
Right.
So these are real, real scum.
Well, was his grandma hench?
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've not looked into the family history. Adrian Ward, Rittenhouse prosecutor, he brought a gun to a fist fight. You mean a riot? A riot with a mob containing other people armed with chains, skateboards, and guns.
Guns? Yeah.
Absolutely true right there. Do you want to read out your comments for Ben & Jerry's?
Yeah, where are they? How did I get them?
Oh, you're in the document. Just scroll down.
Oh, cool. I'm going to scroll down. Scrolling now. Here we go. Ben & Jerry's.
Yeah.
So, Tiber Fett, cool name, it says Ben & Jerry's are owned by the same company that owns Dove. Dove makes women feel bad about their body image. Sell them ice cream until more and more are fat. Dove does marketing campaigns saying plus size is beautiful. Sell them more ice cream. That's a great point.
That is a genius marketing campaign. That's a great point.
So it makes them fat, then tells them that fat is beautiful, so they buy more ice cream and they buy more Dove. Perfect, like synergistic marketing. George Happ says, what is your view on boycotts of openly political companies like Ben & Jerry's? Even though it may not hurt them all that much, I still think it's important to not give money to people who hate you. I totally agree. Yeah. 100% agree. And more than that, I think, you know, if they support defunding the police, you can righteously shoplift from places like Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's were the worst. When they had that tweet that was just so sort of aggrandizingly.
Oh, I've not seen this.
It was like they said, Sainsbury's welcome diverse customers, and if you don't like it, then shop somewhere else. It's like, what you're saying, other shops are racist. Like, racist, Sainsbury's? You know what I mean? This implication,
Tesco's super racist.
That there's loads of racists out there and like they shop at other shops, it's ridiculous. You know, there's some racists. You know what I mean? I'm not going to deny that. There's issues with racism and stuff. But the idea that Sainsbury's isn't racist is bunk, because Sainsbury's is owned by Qatari royals. And Qatar is a deeply racist, homophobic, misogynist society.
I've not seen their non-racist certificate anywhere.
So, so it's ridiculous. And also Sainsbury's introduced segregated workspaces for the 40s in America.
Yeah.
So you can righteously shoplift from Sainsbury's and from Ben & Jerry's.
Disavow, but I support your right as a consumer to spend your money on companies that don't hate you.
And I'd support your right as a consumer to not even spend the money. Just take the stuff from Ben & Jerry's and Sainsbury's. It's your duty.
We disavow that.
Even though Sainsbury's and Ben & Jerry's support it, because they apparently we're not allowed to say you should shoplift from Sainsbury's.
Yeah, disavow.
You're not allowed to. Don't shoplift from Sainsbury's.
Apparently, this is news.
I didn't know there's laws we had to abide by.
Stop having an argument with Carl through the cabs.
I'm ACAB, man. Mr. Fibble says, Ben and Jerry's have been insufferably woke activists for a few years now, so I don't buy their products. Häagen-Dazs, ooh, good callback.
Oh yeah, Häagen-Dazs is nice.
It's better quality, yeah. Student of History says, why is an American ice cream company making comments on UK borders policy? Great point.
Yeah, good question.
Because they want to sell ice cream in the UK. Callum Dayton says, never had Ben and Jerry's, never intend to, given their politicisation. Otherwise, whites killing whites is racist. I thought that was supposed to be a good thing. And if Kyle was black, well, a black 17-year-old defending himself against three white attackers, one is a pedo, you know, are we missing something? Or are they missing something? Everybody's missing something. It seems so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Free Will 2112 says, how do you think Ben and Jerry's would fare in Stalin's Russia? Well, they'd have to spend less on refrigeration. Or Pol Pot's Cambodia, probably sell really well because it's a hot country. Mm-hmm. Aligning with hard leftists who would liquidate you if they gain power is probably a bad idea. Well, I agree. I mean, there wasn't a lot of delicious ice cream in the gulags.
Yeah, I don't think Cambodia was overflowing with ice cream reserves somehow. Yeah.
But you can get it now because of capitalism. And what I find really interesting, the values of the West, the freedom of capitalism. You know, if you see a gap in the market, you can start a business.
Yeah.
So even though America lost the war in Vietnam, you go there now. I mean, it's ostensibly still, I think it's
still
or semi-communist
socialist or
country.
Something. Yeah.
It's like, you notice it more in the North. But anywhere you can go, you can get beers, delicious food, taxi, you know, whatever you want. It's not like capitalism is one. The American values,
oh yeah,
won in the long run, which I think is great. Alex Ogle says the trouble with Ben and Jerry's comments on racism against Asian Americans was that the attacks were largely perpetrated by Black Americans. That would have been a bit difficult for them to point out.
Yeah, that was the defining characteristic between all of these attacks, was that bar one, committed by like a Middle Eastern dude, they all the videos just showed black guys. But Ben and Jerry's, all those woke virtue signaling companies, aren't going to mention any of that. It's just black people are mysteriously being beaten by phantoms in the streets. Oh, goodness.
Asian people.
Oh, yeah, Asian people, whoops.
Yeah, yeah. And Clayton Ross says, many NFL players demand those medical checks for their own safety. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
I'd want to know. So then you know if you've got anything that's going to pop when you're playing. Nord Nerivar says, anyone remember when Ben and Jerry's literally added Priti Patel to rant at her about channel crossings? Yeah, we showed the tweet. I don't know if you're having a dump when we went through that. Kevin Fox says, isn't that Ben and Jerry's Veterans Day poster racist? That looks like a noose. That's a great...
Good point.
Yeah, and this is... I think this is referring to somebody in Scotland. Oh, why can't I remember her name? Marion Miller, who was arrested for a hate crime because she tweeted a picture of a suffragette ribbon that somebody perceived to be a noose.
And, oh, really?
Then it became a hate crime, even though it looked nothing like a noose, and even tweeting a picture of a noose shouldn't be a crime.
I'm sorry, Leo, the country you hail from is becoming more and more ridiculous by the day.
And your country's following. Also, it's the same
That's
country.
True.
It's the same country, you bigot. Sean Nash says, Colin Kaepernickers, I like what you did there, Sean, was an absolute garbage tier quarterback for years before he found the race hustle and jumped. Well, this is Sean's opinion here, not mine. And jumped onto that particular bandwagon. He'd actually got cut by his team for being so unbelievably bad.
That might be his opinion, but it's an opinion I've heard shared multiple times whenever we bring Kaepernick up. So,
allowed to say you should steal Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Well, yeah. Yes, okay. You're not allowed to say that, but you're allowed to.
You're not allowed to steal Ben. It's against the law, and you shouldn't steal Ben and Jerry's ice cream, even though it's what they want, and they've specifically said they want you to do it. So
no,
it seems
no, disavow.
I'm saying they shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
HR Slave says, I love when leftists like Kaepernick talk about community policing. I live in Northern Ireland where we have community police, but here we call them paramilitaries. And this is very true.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you really want a police force that's run by the state. I mean, the state is good at some things, or certainly better than the community for some things. And policing is one of them. You want them, like the police, especially, you know, in the UK, and I think to a certain extent, America, we've got pretty good, fair police who mostly try and do the best by people.
Well,
me and my girlfriend got stopped by the police. When was it? It was two weeks ago before I did, it was the night before I did Lotus Eaters. And they stopped the Uber wear and we were stopped for ages. And so I asked the policeman, you know, what's going on? He's perfectly innocent in that. I wasn't being a dick. And he's all like that. Well, your Uber's not up to standard, blah, blah, blah. He's like, he looks at us. We're sitting in the back of this Uber and he's like, if an Uber turned up and it was this tatty, I wouldn't get in it. It's like, why are you giving me shit? You know what I mean? I haven't done anything wrong. And obviously my girlfriend is like, she's redhead, so she's insane, but she's also a former criminal barrister. And she was drunk, so she leapt out of the car to give him what.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, how do I stop us getting arrested here? But it was so unnecessary. And also the policeman who did it had this wispy little beard and like, you can't even, man, like your face, if your face turned up, you know what I mean? You look homeless. Like, what's that? And you call yourself a man, you can't even grow a beard. If you can't grow a beard, just shave. Just shave. There's no shame in shit. There's shame in having a wispy little, you know, like the ginger. You know how every ISIS cell has got a ginger kid who couldn't get any pussy, so he like joined ISIS? Like, every terrorist. Whenever, you know, you go down Islington High Street and there's that picnic table and they've got all the Qurans on there going, like, they're giving off and like yelling at people and stuff. Man, there's always a ginger one who just joined because he couldn't get any pussy. And they're like, oh, guess what? You know, in heaven, you're going to get loads of pussy if you join. And he believes it.
I was not aware of that.
There's always a ginger. And they're the ones, like the shoe bomber. He was a ginger Scot.
Fair play.
A ginger guy. Tried to set fire to his shoes. We need to...
I'll do one more comment from regarding Saki's shortages, which is from Kevin Fox saying the scariest words to hear, I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I absolutely agree. And with that, it looks like we've run out of time. So thank you very, very much for joining us for this episode of the podcast, Lotus Eaters. Be sure to join us again tomorrow at 1 o'clock UK time for more fun. So
yeah, follow me on Twitter and also on YouTube if you want.
Yes, do that as well. So
Leo Kurse.
Yes. Thank you very much for tuning in. Have a great afternoon.
Bye.